I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 15th of December, Mondays at 1. It's all things political. And our guest this hour is Jennifer Bendry, who has been a White House and congressional reporter for the Huffington Post for several years. She covered Congress for 4 years for Roll Call and spent 4 years covering the Texas legislature for Gallery Watch in Austin, Texas. We have a lot to talk about this hour. Over the weekend, the Senate passed a $1.1 trillion spending package on Saturday night. Senator Ted Cruz forced the Senate into a weekend session. He and Senator Mike Lee of Utah held up the spending bill to emphasize their objections to the president's executive action on immigration. Earlier, Senator Elizabeth Warren expressed her profound displeasure about the plan to weaken the regulation of big banks, and it looked for a little while as though the House may not vote for the spending bill based on that provision. She was on Morning Edition this morning on NPR and was asked at least four times if she was running for president, and she finally said, "I am not running for president. You want me to put an exclamation point at the end?" But people have asked that she do just that. We will also be looking at the Senate Intelligence Committee making public the torture report about the very harsh interrogation techniques that were used on terrorism suspects after the 9/11 attacks. Yesterday marked the very sad 2-year anniversary of the horrible shootings in Newtown, Connecticut. And Jennifer has written an interesting piece about Chris Murphy dedicating yesterday, although it should be probably every day, to acts of kindness to honor Newtown victims. So those are a few of the things that we have on our agenda. Feel free to add to them if you would like. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter. You can find us there at K Dunn Show. Jennifer, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, let's start with this $1.1 trillion spending package that was passed Saturday night. I'll bet a lot of senators were a little upset that they were there over the weekend.
Yes, a lot of senators were very mad in both parties, because the reason they were stuck there all weekend is because two senators, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee from Utah, decided to try to use procedural rules to throw a wrench into the plan to go home for the weekend so they could force a show vote on Obama's immigration executive action. So the net effect was that everybody was stuck here for the whole day on Saturday.
You were too. So you weren't very happy.
Reporters
either.
Were not far behind.
Yeah, I imagine. I did read that it inadvertently enabled Harry Reid to advance a number of nominations, though.
Yes. In fact, that's the story I'm working on today. As a result of Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, the two Tea Party senators, keeping the Senate in session all day, tied up in procedural rules, that enabled Democratic leaders to have hours of time to kill. So why not fill it with filing more procedural motions to start the votes going on nominees who may not have otherwise gotten a vote? Because time is of the essence in a lame duck session.
Mm. I'm sure that wasn't something that Cruz and Lee were anticipating.
It definitely was not. In fact, they were not anticipating the response on Twitter from Democratic senators either, which involved several Democrats cheering and thanking Ted Cruz for helping them to get the president's nominees confirmed.
Hmm. The other senator who achieved, she's already had quite a bit of prominence, but Senator Elizabeth Warren urging the House to not pass the budget bill because of the plan to weaken regulation of big banks. She spoke very eloquently on this. Again, people are asking. She was on Morning Edition this morning and asked no less than four times in various forms, are you going to run for president? And she said, I'm not running for president. You want me to put an exclamation point at the end? But she certainly has taken on the position of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and she's making some waves.
She gave a killer speech on the Senate floor on Friday as the government spending bill was getting closer to passage. She's been fighting it every step of the way because it has some provisions in it that roll back Dodd-Frank protections. Mm-hmm. So She went on the Senate floor and gave this incredible speech that went on for about 9 minutes. In fact, I encourage anybody to go find it and just watch it, because she just tore down Citigroup for literally having its language, its own language, put into the spending bill to ensure that big banks can get away with more risky trades that taxpayers end up having to pay for if those trades don't work out. So she is on fire right now. Between the speech she gave on Friday opposing this big government spending bill and a Treasury nominee separately but relatedly that she is openly opposing over similar reasoning, that he's too Wall Street-backed, she's just on fire the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, she is. And she evidently didn't know, nobody seemed to know, that there was a provision that was slipped in at the last minute that would let these derivatives traders on Wall Street gamble, as she would say, with taxpayer money, and then get bailed out by the government if things went bad.
Right. It's eerily similar to 6 years ago when we all did this. The provision was slipped into the bill in the House by a congressman from Kansas who offered an amendment to a bill over the summer that was adopted to a different but related bill that has now basically gotten sucked into the overall government spending bill. So there was no real debate on the House floor or the Senate floor about this provision. It was just already in the base bill from months ago.
And why would a congressman from Kansas put that in the bill?
Well, the question is, why would anybody do it? Which is, they are, you know, they're doing a favor to Wall Street. You can bet that this congressman, his name is Congressman Yoder from Kansas, he's going to get something back for it. I'm not sure what it will be, but that's what it usually means, that it's tit for tat. You do something really nice for the Wall Street industry, you will get some kind of money in your campaign from them.
And what about the president on the phone to members of the House urging them to vote for the budget bill?
Yeah, that was really something. Not only was he calling members directly, which rarely happens, he's got plenty of staff he can put on the phone to call people on Capitol Hill to urge them to vote for a bill. But you had President Obama on the phone, you had the Vice President on the phone, you had several cabinet officials on the phone. That shows you how close this vote was in the House. And he was lobbying his own party to support the bill, because Nancy Pelosi, who leads the House Democrats, was actively saying that this bill was terrible and that she's going to oppose it. So this was a very interesting dynamic where you've got Nancy Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren teamed up against Obama.
And on the Republican side, you have Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, who are in opposition to many members of the Republican Party.
That's right. And if you take a look at the final votes on this government spending bill in the House and in the Senate, it's very similar. You've got very lefty Democrats voting against it, and you've got very right-wing conservative Tea Party-type lawmakers voting against it, too. So you've got people like Nancy Pelosi, Elizabeth Warren, and then, you know, Ted Cruz, Louie Gohmert from Texas, like the absolute most conservative, Tea Party-friendly members you can think of are teamed up with the most progressive members in Congress on this one.
And did the president, Jennifer, just want to get this passed so that the government wouldn't have a shutdown? What was he worried about if he said that he didn't like some of these provisions either?
Yeah, he didn't like, obviously, the provisions that rolled back his bill, the Dodd-Frank bill. But I think for him it was more important to get the government to keep the government open. But also, it was notable that this government spending bill didn't have any language in it that would go after the Affordable Care Act, and it also didn't have any language in it that went after his executive action on immigration reform. Those are the two biggies that the White House is fiercely protecting right now. Even if it's a show vote on those issues, they don't want it. So the fact that neither one of those issues was tagged onto this must-pass government spending bill, I think that was enough for Obama to say, okay, I'll support this. You guys should just pass it.
Also last week, Senate Intelligence Committee made public the torture report. Dick Cheney was all over TV yesterday, and John McCain, who, as far as I can tell, was the only member of the bodies who was tortured for a long period of time and seems to have a moral standing here. It's hard not to listen to what he has to say. But all of a sudden, there was Dick Cheney again, and we were hearing horrible, horrible accounts of the kind of torture that we engaged in, what constitutes torture. It was hard to listen to.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. I mean, the report that was released is something like a 500-page summary of an otherwise many thousands of pages report that is not public. So we're just seeing the summary, which is 500 pages long itself, and the details that, I mean, anybody can go look at this thing. It's, I mean, the rectal hydration is one thing that keeps coming up in the news, that CIA officials were basically forcing the detainees to be rectally fed food, and that included, at one point, one detainee was rectally fed hummus and pureed nuts and raisins. I mean, and they're trying to argue that this was for a medical procedure aimed at keeping them nourished. But you can ask any medical group out there who's already, you know, they've already been putting out statements saying this is absolutely not a way that we encourage or do, you know, try to feed people. If you're going to not be able to feed somebody orally, you can do it with an IV. Or rectally feeding someone is not a medical procedure. It's torture.
Yeah. Does John McCain get listened to on this issue? Because you have to hear what he says when he says that torture doesn't work and giving up information and not believe that he knows what he's talking about.
I think his voice carries more weight than anybody's.
I do too.
I mean, who else can say they were chained up and tortured during war, who's now in Congress?
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy, and everybody knows who he is, and he's been, you know, in the Senate for years. So he can speak to this issue with experience. You can't trump that. So, you know, he may be the only Republican right now who is vocally opposed to some suggestion that the CIA is in the clear. I mean, he's saying this was torture. It doesn't seem like it's that hard to see the waterboarding and, you know, ramming pureed food up detainees' rectums is not, you know, torture. So at this point, you're just seeing a lot of Republicans besides him trying to align with national security and intelligence industry people, because that's typically what they do. They want to seem really tough. But you cannot ignore John McCain's voice in this by any
right.
means.
Well, was it the International Criminal Court? Was that the body that wanted to bring some of the people who engaged in this and those who ordered it to trial?
Yeah, there has been talk about that. I think that's probably the most prominent group that has said that. And then, you know, there's a lot of questions that have been raised about, well, why hasn't the U.S. followed through with any prosecutions? It's up to the Justice Department. We could theoretically see cases against some of these CIA officials or intelligence people or military people connected to these kinds of torturous treatments. But the Justice Department says that they already looked into stuff back in 2009 and even launched a couple of criminal cases, but dropped them in the end because they concluded that they didn't have enough tangible evidence to prove that there was torture.
Mm.
So there's a lot of emotion and frustration in D.C. right now among some people that there's, at least even optically, there's nothing being done now that we know the kinds of torture that was carried out. There's mm-hmm. still no repercussions.
I was interested in a letter to the editor in the New York Times on Saturday from the president of the American Psychological Association, who was saying, regardless of whether it is effective interrogation technique, torture is unethical, abhorrent, and morally reprehensible. And then she talks about these two psychologists who planned all of this torture. They weren't members of the American Psychological Association. I could see why they wouldn't be admitted. But they and their company allegedly received $81 million for designing this? $81 million?
Yeah, there's that. I heard about that too. And that's just another facet of this whole story unfolding, that there's so much money being paid to people to carry out these kinds of activities. So, again, they are not being prosecuted either.
We're going to welcome phone calls. You're listening to All Things Political on the Ideas Network, which you will always hear on Mondays at 1 o'clock. And our guest this hour is Jennifer Bendry. She's the White House and congressional reporter for The Huffington Post. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. I'm sure that many of you who follow politics closely were watching the actions and rhetoric of both Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Elizabeth Warren, coming from very different perspectives on the $1.1 trillion spending package. You may agree with one that the package wasn't worth passing because of the executive action on immigration reform, or you may agree with the other, that the provisions giving Wall Street a break for allowing them to do the same thing that brought down the economy in 2008, was that provision made it worth not passing this as well. And I'm sure that many of you are familiar with the torture report, and you may have a different point of view on this, that the harsh interrogation techniques were absolutely necessary. I think there is a legitimate question as to whether or not they do any good if people give up valuable information. And we'll move into other discussions as well, but we'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email here is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, where we love to hear your thoughts about the issues of the day, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jennifer Bendry is our guest for All Things Political, the torture report we're talking about. And what about that spending bill? Would you have voted for it? Would you have voted against it? And why? Certainly, one of the people who has been very prominent in talking about Wall Street and the spending bill is Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's getting a lot of attention lately and being asked repeatedly, are you going to run for president? There were some 300 members of former Obama staffers who wrote her a letter and asked her to run in 2016. Would that be wise, or does she not stand a chance of becoming president? We'd like to hear from you. All right, let's go to phone calls for Jennifer. Tristan in Appleton, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
You know, I spent 24 years in the military, and I was in a job that put me in a position where I might become a POW at some point, and I had to go through training regarding becoming a POW, and the reality is you just have to hold out for X number of weeks because any intel you have becomes obsolete. They even taught you, the reality is, hold out as long as you can. We know you're going to break and you're going to spill the beans, but the information will be worthless. So all they have to do is hold out for a week or two. Anything you get from these people by torturing them isn't worth the breath that they give it to you with.
Oh, that's an interesting observation. Jennifer.
Yeah, that is interesting. I haven't heard anybody point that out.
No.
That does make sense, and it makes me wonder how long some of these more discussed detainees had been kept and tortured before they cracked. I mean, were they even quote-unquote relevant anymore after 2 weeks, but maybe the torture was still going on? I don't know.
Thank you very much for your call. Steve in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, you know, I think it's just so sad about this torture thing because it's like most of the people at Guantanamo Bay are most likely innocent considering the CIA was behind 9/11 and Dick Cheney and Paul.
Oh, the CIA wasn't. Let's move on. There is absolutely no evidence that took place by the CIA. Rick in Monona. Hi.
Hi. I had a thought today that this torture that we engaged in, I wonder if it would have been the same if the attackers of the World Trade Center had been from Europe. I wonder if there's not a racial element that we look at these people from Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan and Iraq and think that it's okay to torture them, but if they were German or Russian or English or some other race, we'd avoid it. We'd try some other means. I was curious about your thoughts on it.
Jennifer.
I mean, I think in the end here, the goal that these CIA interrogators were after was information. And so my guess is that the race of the detainee played a small role in this because they're trying to get something out of this person by any means possible. So if you know, they're black or white or Middle Eastern or Native American or Latin, I mean, they've got a small window to try to get some information out of this person, and I think they're going to, it appears they've done whatever they could do to try to get the information out.
Jennifer, what is our current policy concerning torture?
Well, President Obama explicitly banned torture really soon after he came into office. It was one of his first acts, and that was going after waterboarding in particular, which, you know, most people have heard of as the main form of torture that was carried out. So, you know, he's been pretty consistent about saying no torture. We are not a nation that supports torture. But you know, words aside, it is somewhat disconcerting to see the White House not, you know, not offering any kind of response to the torture that did happen in terms of, you know, saying maybe there should be some repercussions, maybe there should be some people held accountable. They want this subject to go away. They punt all the questions to the Justice Department. And even a question that came up in a press briefing last week asking, you know, what is Obama's personal feeling about this torture report? Does he believe that there's been torture and that people should be held accountable? And the response was, that is not a question for the President of the United States.
Really?
Which was, I could not believe that what I was hearing, because you know, you would think the President of the United States should have to answer a question on whether he believes people should be held accountable for carrying out torture. So it is a strange moment where the White House wants to look strong on saying they don't support torture and that Obama specifically opposes it and did so when he came to office, but then will not do anything to add to the conversation about holding people accountable.
Well, he's also, it's my understanding, not making public thousands of pictures, right?
Yes, there's also that. And you know, to his credit on that one, I think the point, the argument that was made in releasing this CIA torture report was that it reveals information that the American public deserves to know about the way we carry out our interrogations. The argument against photographs, and, you know, I'm thinking back to the release of photographs of bin Laden when he was killed. The argument there was that it doesn't add anything to the conversation or to a policy matter. It's just kind of a shock value. So personally, I can see that, because if you looked at 100 pictures of people being tortured, does that change something that, you know, we would otherwise get from learning details in this report, other than magnifying how gruesome things are? I to me, the report seems way more important than seeing photographs.
Mm-hmm. Dick Cheney talked at great length on many television shows over the last few days about how horrible these people were and that he would do it again in a minute. Let's talk about a continuing fight that a Senate committee, you wrote about this, Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted last Thursday to pass new war authorization legislation for the fight against Islamic State militants. Let's spend a few moments on that. Some would say, Jennifer, that this is a fight that's going to be going on for a long time. We spoke with a woman who wrote the New Yorker piece about Syria and Turkey last week, and it was striking to me how many thousands of Europeans and a few Americans are coming through Turkey to fight with ISIS. It's hard to understand from our perspective why this is a battle that people feel is worth joining up for.
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, we have been at war against the Islamic State militants since August. I mean, mm-hmm. If you want to define war as, you know, airstrikes and actual, you know, casualties that we are causing, we've spent more than $1 billion in this effort so far. And Congress hasn't done anything to pass a new authorization allowing this to even happen. So you've got this really strange situation where we're in a war that hasn't technically been authorized yet, and then the White House saying they don't need new authorization because they have a 13-year-old authorization from right after 9/11 saying that we can do these kinds of things. So on Capitol Hill, that's one of the biggest gaps in debate that I think you can find right now on anything. They're not talking about war and war funding and war authorization and people going overseas. We've got 3,000 people in Iraq right now. You know, and the administration is saying, well, they're not in a combat role. These are not combat troops. But people, we've already lost a handful of Americans, and there are certainly people who are flying planes, dropping bombs, who are at risk of getting hurt. I mean, there's a much-needed discussion on this on Capitol Hill.
Right.
There's been nothing.
Yeah, as well as for the American public, because I'm not sure what the plans are to be successful in a war against the Islamic State. How are we going to do that?
Well, see, that's the heart of the problem. And you'll have lawmakers in both parties will say that. They'll say, we do not know what the president's strategy is.
Right.
You hear the president often saying, we're going to degrade and destroy ISIL, right? It's that destroy and degrade phrase.
Mm-hmm.
But then what does that mean as a practical matter? Does that mean we will work with Assad in Syria at some point? Or does that mean we will also go after him separately since he's not an ally of the United States? What role will Turkey have? I mean, there's all kinds of questions that are beyond me that involve foreign policy that you need to factor in if you're going to go to war. And they haven't been hashed out. And that's pretty much gumming up action in Congress on this.
Barb on an email says that in the spending bill, lawmakers inserted something so that my husband, along with 1.5 million other people, will have their pensions cut. Do you know the intricacies of that part of the bill, Jennifer?
I don't know much about that. I know there was something included in the government spending bill related to pensions.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it was the reason that Congressman George Miller, who's a longtime California Democrat who's retiring this year, I know that's what got his support for the bill.
Hmm.
So that's all I know. I know that pensions are a big thing for him. So it sounds like it's something that would help retirees. But beyond that, I don't know much about that.
Where do you find, can you go online? And I know it's a big kind of budget. Where can you read all about it?
Well, the bill is huge, but you can find it online. I think the Huffington Post has the thing linked.
Okay.
And you can also probably find it on the House Appropriations Committee website or the Senate Appropriations Committee website.
Our phone number, 800-486-8655, and it's All Things Political. You're listening to here on the Ideas Network, and we're talking about the torture report. We're talking about the Senate passing a $1.1 trillion spending package and the opposition to that package on the part of conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats. The war against ISIS, how do we go about fighting that kind of war? Have we had any success? And we're looking at people urging Senator Elizabeth Warren to run for president. So feel free to join in on all of those issues and whatever else you deem important politically this week. 800-486-8655 is our number. And let's go to Bob in Wauwatosa. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon. I'm a veteran of military service in the United States with an honorable discharge and a college graduate. And what I think is that if we required universal military service for everyone, no exceptions, upon reaching their 18th birthday, you can bet the farm that upper middle class and up parents would be screaming to outlaw torture. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Bob, for the call.
I think this caller makes a great point about the need for everyone to feel affected by war, because, you know, what this gentleman was just saying reminds me of, there was a congressman from Wisconsin, David Obey. He used to be the House Appropriations Committee chairman, which is a very powerful position, and regularly he would bring up a bill that would impose a war tax, and basically it would impose a 1% tax on everybody who makes more than, let's say, like $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the point, the bill never went anywhere. Nobody wants to vote for a tax, right? But the point was made, which was, if we're going to have soldiers going overseas to sacrifice their lives, back home, the rest of us need to sacrifice too. We can't just sit on our laurels and, you know, talk about war from an armchair and while other people are getting hurt. We should be part of it, too. And, you know, that bill never went anywhere because guess what? People not only don't want to pass a bill that raises, you know, imposes a tax, but people don't want to talk about war. They don't want to get involved in matters of war on Capitol Hill. They haven't talked about it at all this year. And if it involves middle class, upper class people having to pay to help a war and involves their children potentially getting recruited, no, they don't want anything to do with it.
Mm. Let's go next to Bob. Thanks, Bob, for your call. And we go to another Bob, this one in Minnesota. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Or afternoon, rather.
Right.
Hey, I was listening to you on my way through Wisconsin, and I believe the lady with the pension plan reduction, there's a provision in the budget that says for pension plans that are going bankrupt, they have the option, instead of going bankrupt, of reducing benefits from 100% of promised benefits to 75% at some future date.
Mm.
It's just like, which, by the way, is exactly what Social Security's option is. Social Security has the option of reducing benefits in 2033, which is when their funding goes negative, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is going to happen imminently on that, but if the guy is in a pension plan that is massively underfunded, at some point that plan will have to decide about whether it wants to go bankrupt or reduce its benefits to 75% of those promised.
Okay, thanks, Bob, very much for the call. I guess we should do a show on this whole pension issue sometime, too. That would be a good show for us.
And actually, while we've been talking about it, I just looked it up. And interesting because it is George Miller who's behind that, but it's also John Klein, who the two of them are the chairman and ranking member of the committee that oversees issues like this. So it's interesting because this one has bipartisan support for it versus at first blush, it sounded like something Republicans would be calling for because it calls for scaling back benefits. Mm-hmm. But George Miller is on board, very liberal Democrat from California, saying that this is the best solution they could come up with to protect retiree benefits. That's an interesting debate unto itself.
Yeah, it is. We'll do a show on that, Bob. Thank you for your call. Jeff in Madison. Hi.
Yes, all things political, boy, it applies to this. I'm glad to hear you both using the word torture. It was driving me crazy this morning. I was listening to On Point, and the host and guests were all using the euphemism, you know, enhanced interrogation. Mm. And I think when you use the word torture, they were debating the legality of it. And I think when you use the word torture, it's very clear. There's a United Nations Convention Against Torture, which the Reagan administration signed in 1988. I just looked it up. It was ratified under Clinton in 94. That makes it our law, too. It's a treaty. It's our law. It's ratified by our government. It's all illegal. I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, for the call. Jennifer.
I tend to agree with that caller because the president himself has said that this was torture. So there is a reluctance by some to call it torture, but why not? I mean, you know, call a duck, right? do you think waterboarding is an enhanced tactic that is not torture, or having someone puree food and infuse it up your butt? I mean, let's be clear, that's what happened. So, yes, I think it is important. Language is important on this one.
Bob in Superior, hi.
Hi. I was just discussing with your call person. I don't think that we have the definition of torture correct here. Torture is something that the Japanese did when they broke people's bones with pipes, when they pulled your fingernails. None of the things that the government has done or the CIA has done is life-threatening. You aren't permanently scarred for the rest of your life as you would be by these other governments during military actions. And I'll hang up and listen to your
All right, Bob.
Answers.
But thank you for the call.
Well, I think that it's worth noting that at least one detainee, if not another one, allegedly died based on the conditions that he was kept under. So there's that. But then separately, there are definitions of torture that have been forwarded to me from, you know, whether it's the Justice Department or the American Medical Association's Code of Medical Ethics on the way that physicians participated in interrogation. And, you know, just to be clear, groups like this, the American Medical Association, for example, they put out a lengthy statement explaining why the kinds of things that happened from the CIA interrogators are absolutely unacceptable and don't meet any of the principles that physicians are entitled to do under the guise of a medical procedure. It's torture. And so there are some definitions out there that I've seen that from, you know, established sources that make it sound like it's pretty clear in a code somewhere that what has happened has violated the rules.
Let's talk a little bit. I don't want this to go unmentioned. Yesterday was the second anniversary of the horrible shootings in Newtown. You wrote a piece, Senator Chris Murphy, one of Connecticut's senators, decided to devote the day to acts of kindness, which is something every day should be devoted to. But what did he do specifically, Jennifer?
It was a pretty creative response to the Newtown anniversary. Chris Murphy, who is the Connecticut senator, decided that he would spend an entire day driving around Connecticut carrying out 26 acts of kindness. Hmm. And that number reflects the number of children or teachers that were killed 2 years ago yesterday in the Newtown shootings. So he just got in his car and drove around, and he documented everything he did on Twitter. So, you know, one thing he did was, and these are small things, but they were things just to be kind out of nowhere for strangers. So he did things like, you know, in line at a Dunkin' Donuts drive-through, he paid for all the coffees for the car behind him without them knowing. He walked down the street somewhere in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and added time to people's expiring meters, their car meters. He donated some stuff to Goodwill. He went to a toy drive. He donated food to a pantry. You know, just things that people do in their communities sometimes on a day-to-day basis. You know, one person here, one person there. But he just spent a whole day doing it. And I thought that was, I mean, that's one way of giving back for a community that's still healing. I thought that was a pretty creative response.
And a good thing to just think about doing, too. I guess you can't say too often how important those kinds of acts are. You know, if we all did something like that, 26 acts every day, a lot of people would be having a pretty good day.
Or even one, really, right? If somebody filled
one
my
is okay, too.
If my car was about to run out of money in the meter and somebody filled it, I can tell you, and I live in D.C., and I would have had a ticket on my car within 5 minutes.
You're
so
right.
So if someone filled my meter, I would be very thankful, and I would remember it, and I would probably pay it forward.
Oh, I'll have to think about it. I've never done that. I've never thought about putting money in somebody's meter. That's a really good idea. Except that now you got these things where you got to go down the street and put your card and your money in and remember the, you know, it's a whole different thing instead of a parking meter.
Well, you can, you know, just pop some quarters in.
That's true. All right. Thank you, Jennifer. I will do that if I see one today. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
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 Yeah, talking about Newtown in 9/11, and the government says 2 and 2 equals 4. They'll tell you 2 and 2 equals 3. And you say, you can't say 2 and 2 is 4. So, but getting back past Newtown and 9/11, the reporter there from Washington, could you ask her if she knew much about Michael Hastings, who was asking other reporters to put the administration, Obama's administration, to the keep their feet to the fire and really not become like kissing their feet instead. And who mysteriously died in a car accident in California when his car blew up.
I was
wondering, did she know anything about him?
Who is
did
he?
Did she know him?
Who is he?
Yeah, Michael Hastings was a pretty dogged investigative reporter who rankled some very high-level administration officials. I think he's the one who was behind, was it Petraeus, having to step down?
Oh.
I could be wrong on that. But
right. Now I know who he is, yeah.
He was involved in some high-profile investigations and a very respected journalist. And I guess I would say to that caller that, you know, having sat through many of the press briefings at the White House since the CIA report came out, they are not, the reporters in there are not letting the White House just coast on this report coming out without having much to say on it. I mean, you can tell how much the White House press secretary, Josh Earnest, wants to avoid having any more talks about this report, just emphasizing that the Obama opposes torture. But they're still not answering questions like, how does Obama feel about this? Does he feel people should be prosecuted? I mean, you've had that question come up every day for days, and they're just not answering it. But it is nice. It's refreshing to see people continually bringing that up, because to me that is one of the questions that I can't believe they're just ducking.
Jennifer Bendry is our guest, and this is All Things Political on the Ideas Network. Jennifer has been a White House and congressional reporter for the Huffington Post since April of 2011. She's covered Congress for Roll Call and also spent 4 years covering the Texas legislature for Gallery Watch in Austin, Texas. We're welcoming phone calls at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Leave messages with your thoughts on all things political on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for Jennifer for All Things Political, 800-486-8655. Tim in Wanakee is next. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I just had a quick question for the guest. You know, when we're talking about the whole debate about torture, I think sometimes it gets a little framed. But what would you say about Sybelle Edmonds and also Dr. Morgan Reynolds, who was in the Bush administration, when they said that 9/11 was an inside job orchestrated by the Bush?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I don't really want to spend time on that. That's just, let's just not go there. All right, let's go to Bob in Iowa. Hi, Bob.
Morning.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, I guess my big thing is why everybody's making such a big issue of this torture stuff. Why don't we go back to the Civil War? I'll bet there was some torture in that. We better, you know, prosecute the relatives of the people that did that and slavery and all that stuff. These people that supposedly tortured, the people that they tortured as such, that's all they know is bad, killing people, cutting heads off. What are we doing about the future for these people that are getting their heads cut off? I think that's a little bit more important to support and defend the people that are alive than the stuff that you folks are trying to pull. You know, in Obama, you can't say anything wrong to prosecute. What about over there when their ambassador got murdered? Where was he? He ought to have been prosecuted. He should have been there to take care of things. Instead, he put it off on Hillary Clinton. What about the gun sales to Mexico?
Jennifer, what about all of that?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I guess to his original point, I would say that there were torture standards that have been established internationally at a certain point that was after the Civil War and after some of those other battles that the gentleman described. That have kind of guided our modern day rules around what constitutes torture, what's allowed and what's not allowed. So those have developed over time, and I don't think other people have been prosecuted for someone else's torture.
Jane is next. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Jane.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, I did see Elizabeth Warren talk. She's outstanding. Hillary Clinton, 69, Elizabeth Warren. Secondly, both my kids graduated colleges in Wisconsin. They both live, work in New York City. I think people have forgotten the pain that this caused our nation after 9/11. And I did watch Dick Cheney on TV on MSNBC, and oh my goodness, I kind of agreed with him. I hate to say that, but when this was all occurring in the TV stations are broadcasting the collapsed buildings, the firefighters, the human beings, the loss of life. I think there's times, and I think Barbara Boxer, by allowing this to be released, is causing more pain in the United States. I think some things were better left unsaid. I agree with the torture that occurred, and that's all I have to say.
Okay, thanks very much, Jane, for your call. I guess you do have to ask, the overriding question is whether or not you get any results from this. And it seems to me as though there isn't a whole lot of evidence that if you torture, you get valuable information.
You know, it's based on everybody's responses after this report came out. You know, you've got Dianne Feinstein on one side and the Intelligence Committee people, and you've got people like Dick Cheney on the other side or Michael Hayden, the former CIA director, mm-hmm. saying, you know, they're both making arguments for and against torture working in terms of getting intel out of them. So, and then you just hear the answer that makes the most sense to me, which is we don't really know in the end if the torture worked, because what if there was no torture? Would you have gotten the same kind of information out that you did get out? And nobody can really point to that. So to me, it seems, you know, why would you engage in torture if you don't even know for sure that it worked? Never mind that it's, you know, violating human rights. If it's not working either, I mean, that has yet to be fleshed out, I think, clearly in the media.
There were, of course, many more demonstrations over the last few days. They are continuing concerning police in minority communities. You wrote a piece earlier in December about the activists involved with the Ferguson, Missouri protests. They had a presidential meeting, and you say they had words of caution. There's a long fight ahead to make crucial changes to police practices in the St. Louis region and across the country. What are the plans to do just that?
Well, it isn't There is a lot happening on this front. I mean, you've probably seen on TV, there have been protests
amazing
all around the country.
Number. Yes.
Huge protests in New York City and in Washington, D.C., and other towns and cities across the country. People are just outraged about the way that the Eric Garner case was handled in New York, and then, of course, Michael Brown in Ferguson. The White House's position has been, you know, we are taking action, but it is slow going. The one thing that is starting to gain traction is this idea that police should wear body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And that is included in a new initiative being pushed by the White House. There's funding to make that start happening. And I think this is such a complicated issue at its heart, involving race and economic status and law enforcement versus poor communities. And it is a tricky one to know how to even begin to address this. But some of the more tangible responses coming out of Washington are efforts to put body cameras on police and efforts to have more community-driven conversations with law enforcement and members of the community and people from, like, Eric Holder in the Justice Department. They're trying to have these kinds of meetings happen where they're all in the same room talking about, you know, how can the community feel better about itself and work, you know, how can the community trust its own law enforcement to protect them? So that's kind of where things are starting, but it is a long process. It involves so many complicated layers of tensions. How do you begin to peel that apart?
Right. A couple emails and Facebook messages. Akara suggests that Obama is not going to speak out against torture. It's delusional, she says, to think these things are not going on with his administration. He won't want to be held accountable when it comes out later. You think it's delusional to think that they're not going on with him?
I think that the fact that he made it pretty clear from right when he came into office that torture is not allowed under this administration or by the United States, it counts for a lot. You know, he singled out things like waterboarding as an example of absolutely not, we can't do that, we don't do that anymore. So I would be surprised if there are things he's carrying out that, you know, he's not sharing. But there's also the question of how much is the CIA sharing with the administration?
Right.
Because that was a
right.
problem before.
Yeah.
So there is that lingering question.
Yeah, if you don't tell Colin Powell what's going on.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. Jeff in Madison sends this email regarding the person who said there was torture in the Civil War. Torture was dealt with by Lincoln. He issued the Lieber Code, first rules of conduct for armies in the field. Rape was made illegal. The commandant at Andersonville was executed for crimes against prisoners.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Mike in South Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. I just tuned in late, and I only heard the past 10 minutes. My position on this is torture is torture is torture. These people tortured. Those were war crimes. And what the United States needs to cleanse its soul, it needs a Nuremberg-type trial, and we need to try the people at the highest levels because these are war crimes. And another comment on police carrying cameras, if we reach the point in this country where our police have to carry cameras, we are a sick nation. Those are my comments.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. And Helen, we have about 30 seconds. Hi.
Oh, I just have to thank you, ladies. This is the best program. Jennifer, I am so impressed. You present yourself wonderfully. You laugh a little bit. These are very, very difficult issues. You don't sensationalize. You don't scream and yell. I have thoroughly enjoyed this program. Kathleen, I love you. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thanks, Helen. Thanks Aww. For the call. There you go, Jennifer.
Nicest thing I've heard all day.
Well, I hope you hear more nice things that somebody pays your parking meter, too.
I'll be waiting for you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer, very much for being with us.
Anytime.
Yeah, Jennifer Bendry, White House reporter, congressional reporter for the Huffington Post. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Thanks, everybody, for all of your your calls and for listening. All Things Political is the only show we have regularly scheduled. Different guests every week from a variety of political perspectives. So the next All Things Political, next Monday at 1 o'clock. We're going to talk about books. I would suggest, if you don't mind, if you can get a paper and pen with you, because we're going to have all kinds of book suggestions from Daniel Golden, hour two of our program, and you don't want to miss any of the titles. That's coming up.